The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from our secret underground studio in Olympia, Washington, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, it is indeed. So I've been producing this program for nearly 10 years now, largely with the same format. However, I have decided that this week I'm going to change everything and do something completely unlike anything I've ever done before. And since this is my show, then that means that I can do pretty much whatever the hell I want to do with this show. At least within a few legal and ethical constraints, anyway. So, this week, rather than having me yelling at you and then playing some music like I've always done, I am instead going to allow a whole bunch of other people to yell at you and play some music. I have a whole bunch of clips that I've collected over the years consisting of various people saying various things. And so I'm going to share some of this collected wisdom with you this week. Welcome to Thunderbolt Bits and Pieces.
Today on Things That Are Headlines for Some Reason.
Comedy Central Roast was a turning point in Justin Bieber's career.
Channing Tatum does a lip-sync battle against his wife on The Tonight Show.
Taylor Swift and Calvin Harris enjoy adventurous Christmas celebration together.
Victoria Beckham wished her fans happy holidays by posting an Instagram picture of herself and her family.
And Amy Schumer tells Barbara Walters she might want to have kids someday, but she's not sure how realistic that is.
These were real headlines on Things That Are Headlines for Some Reason.
For me, the most significant revelation is the ambition of the United States government and its four English-speaking allies to literally eliminate privacy worldwide, which is not hyperbole. The goal of the United States government is to collect and store every single form of electronic communication that human beings have with one another and give themselves the capacity to monitor and analyze those communications. So even though I've been warning for a long time about this being an out-of-control rogue surveillance state, long before I ever heard the name Edward Snowden, to see in the documents that that not only is their ambition, but something that they're increasingly close to achieving, was to me by far the most significant goal, something that I don't think anyone in the world knew or understood, and every other revelation is really just a subset of that one. And I know I've said this before over many months, many times, and there's a little bit of skepticism when I say it in some circles, but I say it because it really is true. In my opinion, the stories that are the most significant and that are the most shocking and that will have the broadest and most enduring implications are the ones that we're currently working on and have not yet been reported.
Every time you make a phone call, the NSA gets a record of that call.
Hello, I'm Barack Obama. Everybody log in. Everybody keep on signing on. Everybody log on.
Trying to say, if we can't read from your Facebook page,
maybe you have a secret, maybe you wanna keep it, maybe you are a terrorist. Okay, now they were close, try to domesticate you, but you're a lone wolf, baby, it's in your nature. We're gonna liberate you, you better show us papers. If Allah is your maker, America, we're the good guys.
when you're Googling. Well, I know I'm gonna see just where your Google search goes to. When you're on Facebook, well, I know I'm gonna see what likes and updates come from you. If you're on YouTube, well, I know I'm gonna see just what is in your videos. What I'll do with all this data is just something that nobody really knows. And I would pull 500 files, and I would pull 500 more, just to be the man who pulls 1,000 files but won't say where they're stored. If you've got nothing to hide, then you don't have anything to worry about. Private info is not private anymore. It's for you to know and for us to find out. These encroachments on your privacy are mild. Soon you won't remember privacy anyway. We are spying on everybody in the whole United States. God bless the NSA. And I would pull 500 files, and I would pull 500 more, just to be the man who pulls 1,000 files but won't say where they're stored.
Mining data, NSA.
Mining data, NSA.
The media, parts of the Congress, which is now shown to be true, even parts of the judiciary, these 15 bogus judges that approved 36,000 FISA requests and turned out 11. When you get them all entangled here, you have something very much approaching what Benito Mussolini defined as fascism. Do not blanch before the word.
Do what I say, don't do what I do. I know what you do because I'm watching you. Don't you question it, don't you doubt it. Don't even think about thinking about it. God as my witness, life is a business. And busy, busy bees get money for legitness. You're a machine in which a lot has been invested. Now do what you're told before you get yourself arrested. I just want to do what I want to do. Don't you want to do what you want to do? I just came to say what I had to say. Put that shit on lock and throw the keys. You see these borders and you see these lines. You keep these orders or you pay these fines. Now at the hand of gorillas and swine, you keep on digging down in their minds. God as my witness, life is a business. And busy, busy bees get money for legitness. You're a machine in which a lot has been invested. Now do what you're told before you get yourself arrested.
Fascist, 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 f
clip begins with CNN moderator Hugh Hewitt.
Dr. Carson, you mentioned in your opening remarks that you're a pediatric neurologist surgeon.
Neurosurgeon.
And people admire and respect and are inspired by your life story, your kindness, your evangelical core support. We're talking about ruthless things tonight. Carpet bombing, toughness, war. And people wonder, could you do that? Could you order airstrikes that would kill innocent children by not the scores, but the hundreds and the thousands? Could you wage war as a commander-in-chief?
Well, interestingly enough, you should see the eyes of some of those children when I say to them, we're going to have to open your head up and take out this tumor. They're not happy about it, believe me. And they don't like me very much at that point. But later on, they love me. Sometimes you, I sound like him. Later on, they really realize what's going on. And by the same token, you have to be able to look at the big picture and understand that it's actually merciful if you go ahead and finish the job rather than death by a thousand pricks.
So you are okay with the deaths of thousands of innocent children and civilian. It's like...
You got it. You got it.
That is what war... Can you be as ruthless as Churchill was in prosecuting the war against the Nazis?
Ruthless is not necessarily the word I would use, but tough, resolute, understanding what the problems are, and understanding that the job of the President of the United States is to protect the people of this country and to do what is necessary in order to get it done.
Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British wars. The young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I killed my share of engines in a thousand different fights. I was there at the little big horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more dying, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I stole California from the Mexican land, fought in the bloody Civil War. Yes, I even killed my brothers and so many others, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men and now they want me back again, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese skies, set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't a marching anymore. Now the labor leaders screaming when they close the missile plant. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it reason, but I ain't a marching anymore. No, I ain't a marching anymore.
Back when Eisenhower was the president, golf courses is where most of his time was spent. So I never really listened to what the president said because in general, I believed that the general was politically dead. but he always seemed to know when the muscles were about to be flexed. Because I remember him saying something, mumbling something about a military-industrial complex. Americans no longer fight to keep their shores safe, just to keep the jobs going in the arms-making workplace. And then they pretend to be gripped by some sort of political reflex. But all they're doing is paying dues to the military-industrial complex. The military and the monetary. The military and the monetary. The military and the monetary. The military and the monetary get together whenever they think it's necessary. They turn our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet to a cemetery. The military and the monetary use the media as intermediaries. They are determined to keep the citizens secondary. They make so many decisions that are arbitrary. We're marching behind the commander-in-chief who was standing under a spotlight shaking like a leaf. But the ship of state had landed on an economic reef, so we knew he was going to bring us messages of grief. The military and the monetary were shielded by January and went storming into February. Brought us pot-bellied generals as luminaries. 2 weeks ago, I hadn't heard the sumbitch. Now, all of a sudden, he's legendary. They took the honor from the honorary. They took the dignity from the dignitaries. They took the secrets from the secretary, but they left the bitch an obituary. The military and the monetary, from thousands of miles away in a Saudi Arabian sanctuary, had us all scrambling for our dictionaries because we couldn't understand the fucking vocabulary. Yeah, there were some smart bombs, but there were some dumb ones as well. Scared the hell out of CNN in that Baghdad hotel. The military and the monetary, they get together whenever they think it's necessary. War in the desert sometimes sure is scary, but they beamed out the war to all their subsidiaries. Tried to make so damn insane a worthy adversary, keeping the citizens secondary, scaring old folks into coronaries. The military and the monetary, from thousands of miles in the Saudi Arabian sanctuary, kept us all wondering if all of this was really, truly necessary. We've got to work for peace. Peace ain't coming this way. If we only worked for peace, if everyone believed in peace the way they say they do, we'd have peace. The only thing wrong with peace is that you can't make no money from it. The military and the monetary, they get together whenever they think it's necessary. They've turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet into a cemetery. Got to work for peace. Peace ain't coming this way. We should not allow ourselves to be misled by talk of entering a time of peace. Peace is not the absence of war. It is the absence of the rumors of war and the threats of war and the preparation for war. Peace is not the absence of war. It is a time when we will all bring ourselves closer to each other, closer to building a structure that is unique within ourselves, because we have finally come to peace within ourselves. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning parts of the planet into a cemetery. What you gonna do? Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Say what you gonna do? We hounded the Ayatollah religiously, bombed Libya, and killed Gaddafi's son hideously. We turned our back on our allies, the Panamanians, and saw Ali North selling guns to the Iranians, watched Gorbachev slaughtering Lithuanians. We better warn the armies, they may bomb the Pennsylvanians. The military and the monetary get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet to a cemetery. They got folks out there working for war. Two, three, four. Make a whole lot of money, start a little trouble, it's war. Turn this planet in the north and south, it's war. Start a few rumors over there, make money with a war. Peace. Say it to yourself. I believe we got to work for peace. Peace ain't gonna be free. We got to work for peace. Out there working for war. Nobody. Start a little trouble over here. What you got is war. Turn these folks in the north and south. War. Start a little.
gotta work.
Now, I don't want to sound like no late night commercial, but it's a matter of fact that there are thousands of children all over the world, in Asia and Africa and in South America, who need our help. When they start talking about 55 cents a day and 70 cents a day, I know a lot of folks feel as though that's not really any kind of contribution to make, but we have to give up a dollar and a half just to get in the subway nowadays. This is a song about tomorrow and about how tomorrow can be better if we all, each one reach one, each one try to teach one. Nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. Everyone must play a part. Everyone got to go to work. Work for peace. Spirit say work.
From the Australian government. Do you have something to hide? Nah, just kidding. We're not some fascist regime. Seriously though, do you? Unfortunately, encryption makes it hard for us to spy on you these days. So just to make sure, we're introducing yet another law to expand the surveillance state. Introducing the Assistance and Access Bill, or ASACCESS for short. Oh, relax. Despite how it sounds, we're not trying to access your data through your back door. We're just after the keys to your front door. Yep, ASACCESS will force tech companies to do our dirty work for us. For example, by making them insert a little secret sauce in their app, which lets us access your device once you download the latest update. And if they refuse, we'll find the shit out of them. ASACCESS. It doesn't break encryption, only your trust in your favourite apps. To bring you ASACCESS, we've taken the UK's fascist spying law and made it even more fascist by removing any need for judicial oversight. But don't worry, we promise to only spy on you if reasonable and proportionate. And you know you can trust us. We're the same cunts who doxed a welfare recipient for criticising us, who are prosecuting a whistleblower for exposing our misconduct, who throw kids in concentration camps for seeking asylum, and prosecute the journalists who report on them, and who gave $500 million of your tax dollars to a foundation full of our friends. So of course you can count on us to be reasonable and proportionate. And if we're not, well, you'll never hear about it. Because we've also introduced a 10-year jail sentence for any Snowden wannabes who disclose our abuse of ASACCESS. ASACCESS. Brought to you by Australia, where the laws of dickheads can't trump the laws of math, but they can trample human rights. Which is why, to test this shitfuckery, we chose Australia, the weakest of the Five Eyes Alliance, thanks to our lack of a Bill of Rights. So international data requests will now be funneled through us, compromising not just Aussies, but all of you fuckers too. You're welcome. We'd love to know what you think of ASACCESS, so we've set up a public submission system where, for a limited time, you can protest our next step towards a fucked up dystopia. Australian government. Relax, we're not after your dick pics, just the last shreds of your civil liberties. Authorised by the Department of Home or Pairs.
This portion of the Jimmy Dore Show is brought to you by the Malibu Center for Despair. Seriously bummed out because of that thing your mom did when you were 11? Check in and commiserate with well-off people who feel sorry for themselves just like you. The Malibu Center for Despair. If you can afford to come here, you can afford to dwell on even the smallest things that poor people struggling to survive often overlook. Our opulent 67-acre campus, located on the schmancy shores of the Pacific, is the perfect environment for you to forget about the shortcomings associated with a lack of character-building adversity, so you can focus on what's really important, the unfair life of only getting most of what you want. The Malibu Center for Despair. we'll pay attention to you, unlike your dad who was always golfing with his business associates. It's the best self-absorption money can buy. Yes, every day is a pity party at the Malibu Center for Despair. Now back to the Jimmy Dore Show, already in progress.
And actually, we're going to take a quick station break. We'll be back in just a minute.
This program is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. If this program makes your head explode or causes emotional distress, or if you suddenly feel as if life suddenly isn't worth living anymore due to the things you learn on this program, then you should blame yourself for the fact that you're such a wimp that you let the world push you around in such a manner, rather than blaming the producers of some radio show, much less blaming the radio station that is airing the show. And you should maybe soon become a Zen master and or a used car salesman and or an astronaut or whatever, rather than trying to educate yourself about things that are simply going to twist your worldview into a pretzel, making your continued existence on this plane problematic. If you have useful suggestions, or if you wish to participate in meaningful debate, then bring it on. But otherwise, if you aren't going to help, then please just shut up and get out of our way, so that we can do what needs to be done. Have a nice day.
What's it look like out there?
The dogs have finished eating the dead. Now they're eating the weak and the small.
Acid rain destroyed the roof and the bunker. I mean, it's only a matter of time before our skin is gone.
Babies are carrying knives.
Earthquakes are coming every 6 minutes.
The rice, it isn't rice anymore. It burns now.
There's only one thing we can do to survive.
I know. We must. We must get jobs at Walmart.
Yes, the only safe place anymore is a nice, climate-controlled Walmart. Small businesses are failing, and the air outside is toxic. But inside the store, you'll be stocking shelves with bargain pillowcases, fitted sheets, toys, crackers, and more. Plus, employees enjoy our generous benefits package. Benefits include being allowed to stay in the store. Remember, death is everywhere. So come on in, fill out an application, join the family, don't unionize, and make just enough money to get to and from work. Walmart, where else are you going to go?
All right, welcome back. So there used to be a anarchist collective in Olympia that used to produce a series of podcasts called Resonance. And they did one that is called The Witch's Child that I consider to be a work of genius. And so I'm going to replay it this week. Welcome to The Witch's Child.
The Witch's Child. Doubts blew in with the clouds over the grassy hill and down by the willow tree where the child played in the afternoons. The witching hour had come, and the child was still awake, following those doubts past the rows of empty houses to the corner where the bus comes in the mornings to take them all away. A shadow came in the window and settled over the bed. The winds outside calmed, but a little breeze in the room itself seemed to tousle the child's hair and caress its cheeks. When the child fell asleep, the shadow bent over its ear and whispered a bedtime story. Child, beneath this golden roof, you, of all people, know what it means to be homeless. It is the tragedy of some in this world to be uprooted, of others to be rootless. This is the story of the rootless ones. Your bones already know the story, though your mind does not yet understand it. One day, in the waking world, this story will come back to you. Some say it began with the Romans, with their new geometries of warfare, their civilization, and slavery. But the truth is, we only have ourselves to blame. Already before the Southerners came, we had lost the first battle. We chose the war, and have been living in it ever since. It was a small mistake, but it was we who opened the gate to our enemy. We can still undo this mistake, but the hour grows late. Our mistake was this. We stopped celebrating the spring. We let the silence of winter extend over the whole of the year. The time of the year for turning inwards became our entire lives. We turned away from one another and became bored with ourselves. We cared less about what happened in the world outside. So we turned the sensitives into priests and asked them to bring the mysteries to us rather than searching for them. We turned our war leaders into leaders of every day. Of course, all of our days should become a quiet war. We began to fear our own adventures and asked the leaders to entertain us with their trite wars. We fell into routines. Life was no longer becoming, but simply being. The women turned to their fertility cults, replacing an unending web of mysteries with fascination over the one that still fit into their lives, when the one becomes two. The men, jealous of their exclusion from the possibility of creation and foolish to think they ever could be excluded from creation, turned to their destructive sports and wars. The war against women began as just another game, another competitive raid. Those little wars became our pastime, and the years went by as though we were trapped in a little house, counting the days until the equinox, waiting for a spring we never welcomed. But spring has to be welcomed, or it never comes. For the spectator, winter never ends. Spring is an insurrection, a hammer that cracks the walls of seed pods, a bud that breaks the sheets of ice, an erotic meeting that shatters the contemplation of winter and upsets all the old orders by the untamed collision and growth of bodies. This is why on May Day we celebrate. A people who welcome spring will never know of kings. When the Romans came, they trumped all our little games. Our raids and fertility tricks were child's play next to their polity and economy. Their contemplations were more sophisticated than ours, their silence much louder than ours. Their winters did not even come with cold. We saw that they had perfected the game of conquest, and we envied them. In our own eyes, we became the barbarian at the gate. Hermann, who smashed the legions on the forest road, had studied under them. We were not the slave who rebelled, but the young prince. In the end, we were the ones who sacked Rome, but only because we thought to outdo it. When the Christians came, some among us adopted their god because he was a god of conquest, a jealous god created in our image, a god better suited to this war. When they began to destroy the sacred places, to burn the books, to torch the holy groves, there were finally those who understood our mistake. We rose up. We joined those fighting against the legions and the slavers, those princes fighting to become kings, and we marched on Rome. But we misunderstood who we were. We thought that without the Romans, their geometries would disappear as well. But those we followed into war carried them in their breasts. We thought that they were our people because they spoke the same language, but in secret they were speaking the language of conquest. We thought that they were our people because they celebrated the same gods, but in secret they bowed down to the god of jealousy. We thought that we had destroyed Rome, but in fact we had spread it everywhere. This is why on May Day we mock. Most of all, we mock ourselves for this mistake that still haunts us. Since that day, our task has been to learn who we are, because it was not our fight that we joined. The war leaders and their closest followers were still playing their games, but we did not see this because they had long since stopped laughing. They were like the farmer scrutinizing his root cellar, counting the days until the last frost, weighing the diminishing supplies, eating the maths in his head. In their permanent contemplation, they saw that the Romans were becoming weak, and the time was coming to attack them and take over their game. Rome could not be made to work. A succession of war leaders, pretending to sack it, tried studiously to put its geometries back to work, but there was always another war leader eager to try his hand, and the whole thing fell apart. For 1,000 years, an uneasy truce prevailed. The slavery of the Romans was ended, but a venomous compromise snuck into its place. The war leaders who led us to victory returned half of the greatness wrested from the Romans, parceling out among us. They kept the other half for themselves and passed from being leaders to lords. On the estates of the Romans, the servants were told they were free. The land was no longer their prison, but a trust between themselves and the new lords. They could live as they chose, as long as they tithed a part of the harvest to feed their liberators and the armies that protected them. A compromise between lord and peasant. A new equation for a thing that was being called freedom. Caesar was not dead. There were 1,000 Caesars, and the church kept peace among them. The priests came among us. They taught us to hate our bodies. They taught us to fear the forest, the mountains, the black night. They monopolized magic and wed it to ceremony. Many free communities remained and stayed true to the old ways, but one by one they were conquered, chased out, razed to the ground. The princes offered us protection, but they were ones bringing war. No one could stand up to them but by allying with another of them. The princes were brought into the church first, in order to make us believe we were the same, and at the same time to make themselves seem godly. They brought the religion down on their serfs. There were heretics, but thousands of us were thrown on the fire. Most of all our memories were burned. The voice was replaced with paper, and a greater silence came to reign. Any stories that were not in their one book were banished. Memories of magic, of healing, of speaking with the forest, of our origins, memories of the time when we shared everything and nothing was owned, were suppressed. This is how they destroyed our roots. And this is why, on May Day, we tell stories. Stories of our lives, of our struggles, of the future we want, of a past we invent because we no longer remember it. One year, their whole game was almost wrecked by a simple force of nature. A disease swept through the crowded cities and hungry countrysides, and few had the strength to resist it. Every third person perished. The princes and the priests were most troubled by their loss of subjects. Bodies in their service became the most prized wealth, and they suddenly discovered that they were not in charge of the production of bodies. The mothers and midwives were. What if these should decide to sabotage the growth of the nation for their own personal reasons? There were even some who declared they would not bring children into this world to live as servants. Contraception and abortion became the worst of crimes and sins. Love was only allowed if it bore children. The Christians had always hated women who loved women and men who loved men, but now they turned ever more from preaching their hatred to enforcing it at the gallows. Midwives were suppressed wherever the princes could afford it. The mistrusted choices of the mother were overruled with the loyalty of the professionals. The worst heresy was that people could learn from their own bodies. The only learning to be trusted in the future was the education in schools and the new universities. And all the professions they produced were self-regulating conspiracies. One could only practice by joining the profession, and one could only join the profession by passing through the training administered in the universities. And one could only pass the training by adopting the goals of the princes who funded those universities. In the interests of keeping subjects alive, midwives were kept on as nurses, because the new doctors were inadequate on their own. But they excelled at governing the bodies under their charge with an iron discipline. The world before these doctors was mute and witless. In their minds, sickness was not an attempt to communicate, and bodies could not be trusted to heal themselves. Disease was something to be located, named, and excised. In time, even the experience of pleasure would be classified as a sickness. This is why we celebrate May Day with orgies, to learn from our own bodies, to show that pleasure can be shared with whomever we choose. to respect another's desires and take joy in their satisfaction. There were many revolts, many reversals, but over the centuries the princes became kings, and their domain expanded. Our yoke became heavier, and we were expected to pull more and more wealth from the land to give to our lords. And these lords denied there was ever a time when they were our brothers in arms. They were separated by blood, related to God, unlike anything else on the forsaken earth. It was forgotten that being a serf was once thought of as an infinitely better than being a slave. There was less and less difference. Still, the lords needed to squeeze more blood out of the earth. They turned toward faraway lands, and they called the people they met slaves. But this was a crueler slavery than anything the Romans had ever inflicted. If their god despised the human body, he hated slaves' very souls. They needed our help in these new wars of conquest, and above all, they needed to prevent our defection. So they told us we were white, which was immutably different from being black or being a savage. The lords and their priests, cops, and explorers could not build new cages fast enough, so they built categories and taught us that we were born into them and could never choose who we were. And who we were was an army mobilized to assault all those who still had roots in the world. This is why we celebrate May Day with visions. To see that magic is everywhere, and all life is mutable, all categories inadequate. For in those years we fought many wars against them. We burned lords and priests, we ran off with savages, we threw captains overboard. And they responded by intensifying their war against us. They burnt millions for using sacred plants, for healing, for speaking with the forest, for communing with the old gods, for refusing to be white, for disrespecting their new laws that said land was not a trust but property, adhering to individuals and only to men. And they slaughtered many millions more of the rooted ones to take their lands or punish them if they refused to be uprooted. And then they moved us all about, wherever they wanted us, rootless and uprooted, mixed together, tracked by our categories, until the very earth became strange to us, and we to ourselves. They put us to work. They no longer asked for a portion, but for everything, for our very time. It was not enough to partition the land. They also had to partition our lives into hours and assign each one a price. They learned to kill us and how they kept us alive. They taught us to view life as a series of numbers, to convert joy to value. The forest became lumber. Our hands became labor. They ruled us with calculations determining the cost of our lives, the price they needed to pay us to keep working. Eventually, they tricked us to view life in the same terms. This is why we celebrate May Day with feasts. Because scarcity is a phantom that must be banished, because the only things that matter cannot be counted, because despite all that we have endured, we love ourselves and we will not be instruments for the ambitions of others. On several occasions we still rose up. We captured kings and threw them from their towers, bombed their carriages, or cut their heads off. But the war still carried on. Over time, the kings fractured and multiplied into a whole array of technicians. They made us accessories to production. They turned our bodies into machines. The factories were the new model for humankind, the new treasure of our rulers, and they despised us for the fact that their precious machines needed us. The old equation changed. Freedom no longer meant a compromise between master and subject. It meant all power to the machines and the greatest mobility for their product. Our lives were sacrificed for the machines to keep running. This is why we celebrate May Day with sabotage. For we will not surrender the rhythm of life to the timing of gears. All their new techniques of warfare could not quench our rage. Even in the factories, or in the private places where they tried to confine the women, we formed new communes. Major upheavals shook the walls of the well-masked princes, and they began to call these upheavals revolutions. They said the old forms of authority were finished. They said we were all free and could participate in their project as equals. And most of us were fooled. Just like the barbarians before us, we reacted more to our exclusion than to our domination, and tried to become the new Romans. But more and more are beginning to realize that this project we're invited to participate in is the war against all of us. It allows us anything but mutiny. It keeps us alive as long as we do not nourish ourselves. It demands only our complicity in this constant uprooting and the suppression of those who still remember their roots. They put our freedom down on paper, the better to silence it. This is why we celebrate May Day with riots. To make a noise that will not go away. To burn all that is not true. To rip up the paving stones and discover, beneath them, the earth. To begin to grow roots again. This is your story, child. This is why it seems you have everything, but you feel you have nothing. Trust your feelings. Do not numb them with the pills they offer you. Because those feelings of anguish and rage are the same itch this seed feels in the last days of winter, before it bursts open and sends out its buds into the world. It is this growth, uncontrolled, spontaneous, that would deprive them of their soldiers, which is why they fear it above all else. Not everyone arrived in this desert along the same path, but there are many who share your story. There are others who still remember their roots and know where to find them. But those like you do not even know what is missing. Remember this story, and there will be hope for spring.
There's a girl on the street in a trash bag dress. There's a baby in her belly and milk in her breast. And I'm crossing the street 'cause she's acting so wild. She used to be me, and she's somebody's child. Spare a little thought for the down and out, 'cause it's true. If the tables were turned, if the deal was different, it might be you. Look at that man. He lives in his car, 'cause a run of bad luck went and pushed him too far. And the woman who lives in a box at the back, when she started out, did her dreams include that? So spare a little thought for the down and out, 'cause it's true. If the tables were turned, the deal was different, it might be you. So leave them on the streets if their families don't care. We've got crow's feet to fill, we've got no cash to spare. The food lines are endless, the shelters are full, and such are the things they don't teach you in school.
She's somebody's child, you know. She used to be me. somebody is child.
All right. That's the end of the regular part of this week's show. In the interest of not interrupting the flow, I decided to save all the credits for the very end here. This week's show started off with Headlines for Some Reason by The Final Edition. Then we had Glenn Greenwald speaking on the NSA. Then we had the NSA song by Harry Shearer. Then we had Watching You by Insurge. Then we had Ben Carson speaking on Killing Children for Peace. And then we had Phil Oakes singing I Ain't Marching Anymore. Then we had Gil Scott Heron with Work for Peace. Then we had Ass Access from The Final Edition. We had The Pity Party from Jimmy Dore. We had Jobs at Walmart from The Final Edition. We had The Witch's Child from the Resonance Distro. And then we had Somebody's Child by Judith Owen. So again, all the views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and some of the people that the show producers admire this week. Rainier Avenue Radio is having their funded drive, so if you're a RAR listener, why don't you kick some money down towards them? And all the other stations that air the Thunderbolt could use a few dollars as well. So, some of you get 6 more minutes, but otherwise, for the rest of you, we're out of here now. And so...
Thank you very much.